in this manner was the murder of a scientist who himself was guilty of creating bioweapons responsible for the murder of many others. Well, in Canada alone, of the 300 victims who filed for compensation, 250 were turned down with the excuse of not having been affected badly enough or for filing too late or for the lack of medical records, which the CIA had conveniently destroyed. But these victims are only a fraction of those who were severely injured and killed by the similar scientific experiments on human beings without their knowledge and consent. Because in addition to these human guinea pigs and the some 7,000 U.S. soldiers used for these experiments, there were thousands more who paid the price for the projects approved by the American government. People in Korea and elsewhere who received the final product which resulted from these experiments. The most voiceless victims of the CIA's biological warfare were these non-Americans whose suffering didn't seem to be an area of concern as they were citizens of the so-called enemy countries. You see, the most dangerous brainwashing method is not that which was done using LSD and other drugs and terror techniques, but the media propaganda that dictates to people every single day which lives should matter and which ones are simply all the expendables. Perhaps it's time for us to unplug ourselves from all the noise from the screens and give our minds time to process what is reality and what is a creation of cyberspace. Be able to discern the real from the created is the test of the day. And depending on how well we score, it can help determine if we can free our minds or simply behave like a puppet on a string, giving in to the whims and directions of others on the web. Well, with that, it brings us to the end of this week's show. And we hope you will be joining us for our next Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashmi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Leaders meeting with people of Isfahan province. On Saturday, 19th of November 2022, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with hundreds of people from Isfahan province. In this program, we discuss the leader's speech and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. The 16th of November is an epic day in Iranian history, an unforgettable day. On 16th of November 1982, an honest, God-fearing people were tested by the Almighty. Isfahan, a city of culture and arts in Iran, gifted nearly 23,000 martyrs to the Islamic Revolution during 8 years of sacred defense. But on 16th of November 1982, the bodies of 360 young Isfahanis were carried on the shoulders of the people of Isfahan, and an emotional funeral was held in the city, and the bodies were laid to rest in the city's cemetery. Just a few days later, another 250 bodies of young Isfahanis were laid to rest in the city, and another highly emotional funeral was held in Isfahan. According to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, all over the world, if the blood-soaked bodies of 360 young people are brought back to a city for a funeral service, then that city will publicly grieve and publicly mourn and shut down for the day. But the city of Isfahan did not. It is recorded on that fateful day after the funeral service that the young Isfahanis immediately volunteered to go to the war front, and on the same night, a huge caravan, a convoy of young people, left the city of Isfahan heading for the war front in western Iran. The leader poignantly added, "Isfahan is a city of science, a city of faith and the arts. Some great scientists and artists and craftsmen have emerged from Isfahan over the centuries. Heroes of the revolution, such as Martyr Kharazi and Martyr Kazemi, each of them heading a famous brigade of young Isfahanis who were prominent in the front lines and played such a vital role in the 8-year imposed war. Truly, the people of Isfahan are worthy of whatever service we can provide them." Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei met with hundreds of people from Isfahan province on Saturday, 19th of November. At this meeting, the leader of the Islamic Revolution spoke about how the arrogant powers have been marshalling their forces against the Iranian nation. He explained that the arrogant powers are lining up against the Iranian nation by intensifying anti-Iranian sentiments and that they have used all their capabilities to induce despair and deadlock in the minds of some people, especially young people. He said the main problem that the arrogant powers have with the Islamic Republic is that if the Islamic system of government succeeds and prospers internationally, then Western claims about liberal democracy will be invalidated. The leader continued by raising the question of how Iran can achieve progress, adding that various methods are required to achieve progress. But the most important means of achieving progress is hope. That is why the enemy is trying so hard to induce despair, hopelessness, and feeling of deadlock. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the creation of hope as one of the basic gauges of patriotism in Iran, emphasizing that those who induce despair and hopelessness and the feeling of impasse are in fact against Iran and cannot claim to be patriots. The leader of the Islamic Revolution also referred to the domination of the Western world over various countries using claims made about liberal democracy, adding that over the past three centuries, the West plundered the resources of different countries using the pretext of freedom and democracy. Ayatollah Khamenei poignantly added, "Europe, originally a poor continent, became wealthy and rich at the price of impoverishing numerous countries and keeping them always backward and underdeveloped." The leader added, "At present, there is a system based on religion and real democracy in Iran, which has given identity to its own people and revived them, and it has refuted the claims made by the West about liberal democracy." The leader also identified the ways in which Westerners use the terms freedom and democracy to act against freedom and democracy in other countries, explaining that Afghanistan is a very familiar and a very obvious example of a country which the Americans invaded under the pretext of freedom and democracy. However, after the Americans spent 20 years committing all sorts of crimes there and plundering the country, the same government that they had ousted returned to power, and the Americans left the country in shambles and in disgrace. The leader underlined that if the Islamic Republic had failed to confront the United States and the arrogant powers and had accepted their coercive, despotic behavior, there would have been less pressure on Iran, but they would have dominated the country, clarifying that during these years, whenever the strength of the Islamic Republic has been more pronounced, the enemy's efforts to claw at it have also increased. Ayatollah Khamenei further noted that the country's main challenge today are the challenges of progress and obstruction, recession and resilience, because Iran is making progress, but the arrogant powers are anxious, upset and frustrated about the progress that is being made by Islamic Iran. Because of this frustration and anger, the Americans and Europeans are getting involved, using everything at their disposal, but they cannot do a damn thing, he said. They have not been able to do anything up until now, nor will they be able to do anything from here on either. The leader emphasized that in the battlefield, made up of Iran and the arrogant powers, the United States is at the forefront with Europe following behind the US, explaining that during the years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, all the US presidents have stood up to the Islamic Republic and sought help from whoever they could, including the Zionist regime and some other countries in the region. Yet despite all of these efforts, the enemies of the Iranian nation have failed miserably. The leader of the Islamic Revolution further underscored that the main goal of those who have organized the riots was to bring the people out onto the scene, and that they were not able to bring out people, so instead they are creating mischief in the hope of wearing out the country's officials. He added that they are making a mistake, because people are getting tired of this mischief and it is causing people to loathe and despise the enemies even more than before. In this regard, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei emphasized that without doubt, this evil apparatus will disappear and that the Iranian nation will then enter the field with more strength, a fresh spirit, and will continue to make even more progress. The leader said the ability to create opportunities from threats is part of the characteristics of a nation that has faith. He referred to some examples of progress and advancement that have been made in recent weeks, such as Iranian scientists discovering a new method to treat leukemia, engineering new innovative equipment required for extraction of oil and gas, the inauguration of a strategically important railway link in Sistan Baluchistan province, which is an important part of the north-south transportation corridor, as well as an inauguration of a number of new factories, the inauguration of the country's first offshore refinery, 6 new electricity-generating power plants, one of the world's largest telescopes, as well as the launch of a new satellite carrier rocket. The leader said these are all examples of Iran's advancement, especially at a time where the enemy is trying to prevent this progress with riots. The leader of the Islamic Revolution noted that another opportunity that has been created by the riots is a revelation of the true colors of those who organize these riots, who claim to be supporters of the Iranian people, adding that the hostility displayed towards all the sanctities of the Iranian nation, all that the Iranian people want, the hostility against Islam, burning of the Holy Quran, burning of mosques, hostility against Iran, burning of the Iranian flag and disrespecting the national anthem of the country, all of these have revealed the true colors of those who are behind the riots. In this context, he also added that they claim to be on the side of the Iranian nation, yet the Iranian nation is a Muslim nation, the nation of the Holy Quran, the nation of Imam Hussein, asking how can those who insult Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, who disgrace Arba'in and the Arba'in walk attended by millions of Iranians, claim to be supporters of the Iranian nation. In another part of his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei touched on the heroic establishment of the Imam Hussein army and the Najaf army as two battle armies of Isfahan province during the sacred defense years, saying that the offering of 23,000 martyrs, tens of thousands of veterans, thousands of freed war captives, and the existence of proud families who have dedicated 1, 2, and up to 7 martyrs to the Islamic Revolution is proof and a sign of the honor and revolutionary and jihadi identity of Isfahan province, and that all conscientious human beings have a duty to safeguard this magnificent legacy.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
International Atomic Energy Agency has once again shown that it is acting on a political capacity rather than a technical one. The IAEA Board of Governors adopted an anti-Iran resolution despite Tehran's positive and constructive cooperation with the agency. Iran's foreign ministry says the politically motivated resolution was issued while Iran has the most transparent peaceful nuclear program in terms of the number of facilities under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency compared to other countries and the number of inspections its nuclear activities have undergone by the IAEA. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani stressed that the resolution was enforced after the US and the 3 European countries, Britain, France, and Germany, exerted pressure on the agency's board of governors. Earlier, Kanani had said Iran took the first step in responding to the resolution. That came as director of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, said earlier in the day that the Islamic Republic will give a firm response to the anti-Iran resolution. Iranian officials have stated that Tehran won't bow to pressure and that Iran will continue its peaceful nuclear program in accordance with its needs and in compliance with its international obligations. Also, Iran's foreign ministry has earlier slammed the instrumental use of the international organizations against independent nations, saying that has become a norm of the foreign policy of Western countries. The resolution adopted on Thursday is the second resolution passed by IAEA this year, and calls on Tehran to fully cooperate with the agency's probe into uranium traces at three alleged undeclared sites in Iran. Tehran says the IAEA is basing its statements on information fabricated by Israel. Iran has started enriching uranium to the purity level of 60% at its Fordo nuclear facility following the recent resolution that the U.S. and the European Troika initiated at the UN Nuclear Agency's Board of Governors to mount pressure on the Islamic Republic. Tehran has informed the International Atomic Energy Agency of its decision via a letter. It described the move as a strong message to the recent anti-Iran resolution passed by the IAEA's Board of Governors. Iran also installed two new IR-2M and IR-4 cascades at the Natanz and Fordo facilities, which have now reached the stage prior to the injection of uranium gas into centrifuges. This means that Iran has practically imitated uranium enrichment by means of the new cascades, and the process will finish within the next few days. Moreover, Iran has fitted and launched new centrifuges at two empty holes in Fordo and Natanz nuclear sites, in what is deemed as a decisive response to the resolution against the country. The holes under Iran's commitment to the terms of the landmark 2015 nuclear deal, officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, had been vacant, but centrifuges have been installed there once again. The report went on to point to the replacement of IR-1 centrifuges at Fordo with IR-6 as Iran's fourth important move against the IAEA resolution, stressing that the measures will increase enrichment at the site by 10 times. The latest measures are set to be in line with a law approved by the Iranian parliament to counter unilateral sanctions imposed by the United States on Tehran. The Iranian parliament passed the law, dubbed the Strategic Action Plan to Counter Sanctions, in December 2020, prompting the Iranian administration to restrict the IAEA's inspections and accelerate the development of the country's nuclear program beyond the limits set by the JCPOA. Iran took five steps in scaling back its obligations, among them abandoning operational limitations on its nuclear industry, including with regard to the capacity and level of uranium enrichment. All those measures were adopted after informing the IAEA beforehand, with the agency's inspectors present on the ground in Iran. Negotiators from nearly 200 countries at the COP27 UN Climate Summit in Egypt agreed to set up a loss and damage fund meant to help vulnerable countries cope with climate disasters. They also agreed the globe needs to cut greenhouse gas emissions nearly in half by 2030. The agreement also reaffirmed the goal of keeping global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. However, for the 27th time, the UN climate talks have failed to directly address the biggest driver of the climate crisis, the production of gas, oil, and coal. This is amid calls for the phase-out of all fossil fuels inside the conference walls and beyond. More than 80 countries had supported a proposal to phase down the use of fossil fuels at the UN climate summit. Ultimately, an attempt to address the biggest source of the planet warming emissions that are causing the climate crisis ended in a fiasco, as the participants only agreed to phase down polluting coal power and phase out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies. That's after a number of oil and gas producing nations, led by Saudi Arabia, blocked a key proposal to phase out all fossil fuels, not just coal. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said it is more than frustrating to see overdue steps on mitigation and the phase-out of fossil energies being stonewalled by a number of large emitters and oil producers. Addressing the summit, the European Union's climate chief, Frans Timmermans, said the EU was disappointed with the final outcome of the summit.
What we have in front of us is not enough of a step forward for people and planet. We should have done much more.
The UN chief, Antonio Guterres, reacted with saying that the COP27 climate talks had fallen short in pushing for the urgent, drastic carbon cutting needed to tackle global warming.
Our planet is still in the emergency room. We need to drastically reduce emissions now, and this is an issue this COP did not address.
Environmental campaigners labeled the COP27 summit as yet another monumental failure to tackle climate crisis. Activists blasted richer countries for not doing more to limit carbon emissions. They say the US, EU, UK, and others came to the summit with empty words, hollow promises, and the refusal to take responsibility for having set the planet on fire and destroying millions of lives and livelihoods. While the agreement to establish a loss and damage fund represents immense progress for vulnerable nations who have been calling for finance to address the impacts of climate change for many years, this win is bittersweet. The failure to address the root cause of loss and damage through agreeing to phase out oil, gas, and coal will mean more loss and damage in future. Currently, approximately 84% of the world's energy needs are met from the usage of fossil fuels, especially oil. In 2021, the world consumed nearly 490 exajoules of fossil fuels. That amounts to an unfathomable figure of epic proportions. The world is on track to produce more than double the fossil fuels that are compatible with a 1.5 degrees Celsius target. The fossil fuel industry is also earning 11-figure profits from this addiction, while households struggle to afford basic needs and over 1 billion people live with almost no modern energy. Africa alone is home to 600 million people without access to electricity. The US and China top in fossil fuel consumption. According to data, an average American consumes at least 23 barrels of petroleum every year. With billions of dollars invested every year into establishing wars, strengthening military and weaponry technologies by developed nations, they still have not come up with a concrete solution to end complete dependency on fossil fuels. Future changes are expected to include a warmer atmosphere, a warmer and more acidic ocean, higher sea levels, and larger changes in precipitation patterns. The extent of future climate change depends on what we do now to reduce greenhouse gases.
Security services, the fake Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians that have engineered plots to spark a civil war, destroy and break up Iran, must know that Iran is neither Libya nor Sudan. That was what Iran's foreign minister tweeted recently. Abdullahian said that Iran's enemies have their eyes set on Iran's territorial integrity and identity, accusing Israel and Western intelligence services of plotting to start civil war in the Islamic Republic. The statements were confirmed by a leaked audio from a presenter at UK's state-funded news channel, BBC Persian. Abdullahian had good reason to relay those sentiments. The statements came on the heels of a number of terrorist attacks in the Islamic Republic. One took place in Izeh, in the southwestern province of Khuzestan, killing 7 people, including a 9-year-old boy and woman. The other took place in Isfahan, in which terrorists attacked security forces and killed 3 of them. There's a vicious anti-Iran media campaign led by terrorist media outlets like the Saudi-funded Iran International, which are twisting the truth and are accusing Iranian security forces of committing the terrorist acts. The stage of the anti-Iran plot is called an armed one, something that the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton warned about. He claimed that subversive elements in Iran, which he dubbed as the opposition, were arming themselves with weapons stolen from besieged forces and smuggled from Iraq's Kurdistan. This was evident when an uptick in the number of security forces killed were reported during 3 days, from November 15th through November 18th. During this period, 14 security forces were reported to have been victims of terrorist attacks. The terrorist killings in Izeh, Isfahan, and Mashhad, which followed a recent similar attack against pilgrims and worshippers at the shrine of Shah Cheragh in Shiraz, also showed that the enemy plots have failed, and they are now subscribing to terrorist acts involving firearms and weapons. Iran has blasted the silence of the international community over the recent terrorist attacks. It blamed foreign powers for promoting and encouraging violence and terrorism. Further said that their silence is testament to that, saying undoubtedly the international silence of claimants of human rights and foreign promoters of chaos and violence in Iran in the face of the most blatant terrorist operations in a number of Iranian cities conveys no other message than encouragement of terrorism and the promotion of terrorism across the world. The Iranian city of Mashhad. Funeral processions were held for three besieged volunteer force members who were stabbed to death by rioters earlier this week. The turnout in the tens of thousands. Iran's leader has stated that they are trying to give the impression that large numbers of people are opposed to the Islamic establishment in order to impress ignorant individuals. However, the leader noted that the people's mass presence on stage to safeguard the Islamic revolution amounts to a slap in the face of ill-wishers. That became even more evident when the following day in Isfahan, again people showed up in large numbers, tens of thousands, to pay their last respects to the victims while condemning all acts of violence and terror. Putting these scenes next to each other, there is no comparison. The Saudi-funded Iran International depiction of what is happening in Iran is far from reality, to the point that the channel, which Iran has named a terrorist entity, is actively promoting and encouraging not only acts of violence, but is under the delusional impression that there is a revolution underway in Iran. The scenes, when put next to each other, speak for themselves.
For weeks, Iran has witnessed unrest and riots in its different cities. The unrest started after a young woman named Mahsa Amini fainted in police custody and later died in hospital. The protests were initially peaceful, but violent elements supported by Western spy agencies hijacked the protests and turned into violent riots. The unrest has provided a fertile ground for Western governments and spy agencies to launch a media warfare on Iran and create anti-Iran fake news. A recent notorious case in point is the recent tweet by Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. In the controversial tweet, the Canadian Premier had claimed that Iran has sentenced 15,000 protesters to death. The false claim, which has been part of the media campaign against Iran, has been circulating on social media in recent days. The inaccurate tweet was live on Trudeau's official Twitter account for almost 12 hours before it was deleted. Several Western celebrities and news outlets, including the Newsweek, also shared the erroneous information. This is not the only case of false news propagated against Iran. When the protests first started in Iran, Western-backed propaganda outlets claimed that Mahsa Amini was beaten to death by Iranian police forces. Following an elaborate investigation, that claim also proved to be false. It's now become a common practice for these propaganda machines to publish unverified footages on protests in Iran. Back in September 2022, US media outlets ran a controversial report. The report was widely discussed and celebrated in anti-Iran outlets. But it turned out to be a fake report after Ayatollah Khamenei publicly attended a military ceremony in Tehran in October. The false report was propagated by Western outlets as Iran was battling the Western-backed riots. Social media platforms have also turned into a battleground of narratives against Iran. Analysis shows those tweeting the hashtags associated with the unrest showed a striking number of new accounts created since the protests started.
In August 2011, when there were riots in London because someone was shot and killed by the police, a number of people were killed. I don't recall the exact number, But big tech, Facebook, back then BlackBerry, and Twitter cooperated with the British government. In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments, even though in the riots in London, people were killed, and they arrested people and put them in jail for inciting riots. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
The online anti-Iran campaign is fed by fake accounts used by members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization terrorist cult who are stationed in Albania and so-called journalists employed by the Saudi-funded London-based Iran International TV, which is now on Tehran's terror blacklist. The television channel has openly been promoting monarchists, the highly notorious MKO terror group, and most significantly, separatist terrorists. A particular case in point is a project by Western media outlets to accuse the government of killing its own citizens. They have produced a long list of citizens which they claim have been killed by security forces.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
Britain's biggest supermarket chain, Tesco, has limited its customers to 3 boxes of eggs as avian flu outbreak hits supplies. Tesco has become the latest grocer to ration eggs due to supply issues. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. Tesco has become the latest grocer to ration eggs due to supply issues. Customers are now limited to buying 3 boxes of eggs at the checkout because of the dual blows to poultry farmers of rising costs and an avian flu outbreak. Tesco, Britain's biggest supermarket chain, follows Asda and Lidl in setting limits after they restricted purchases last week. At the time, the retailer said it had good availability with no limits, but now a temporary rationing policy has been brought in. Tesco said it is working hard with its suppliers to ensure a good supply of eggs, but has taken the step as a precautionary measure. British farmers have been hit by soaring energy costs in recent months, and the price of wheat has risen because of the conflict in Ukraine. The grain is a key component in chicken feed. They have also warned about the lack of money they get from supermarkets for the sale of eggs. At the same time, Britain's largest ever avian flu outbreak has led the government to tell farmers to keep all poultry and captive birds indoors. There have been 252 cases of the virus since the outbreak began in October of last year, with 118 of them coming since 1st of October this year. Millions of birds have died or been culled in the last year. The government announced on Monday, 21st of November, that a bird flu outbreak had been found at a farm near Barnard Castle in Durham. All birds at the site will be culled, and a 3-kilometre protection zone and a 10-kilometre surveillance zone have been set up. After some supermarket restrictions were announced last week, the Director of Food and Sustainability at the British Retail Consortium, Andrew Opie, said, "While avian flu has disrupted the supply of some egg ranges, retailers are experts at managing supply chains and are working hard to minimise impact on customers. Some stores have introduced temporary limits to the number of boxes of eggs customers can buy to ensure availability for everyone." British newspaper The Express has more for us. Tesco is the latest UK supermarket chain to limit egg buying to only 3 boxes per customer. It comes after Asda and Lidl set similar rations last week. British poultry farmers currently face rising costs for chicken feed and energy, at the same time as being hit by an outbreak of bird flu. It has led to a squeeze on the supply of eggs on supermarket shelves. Tesco said last week that they had good availability with no limits on buying, but was nonetheless working to protect supplies with producers. As a result, it has introduced a temporary rationing policy following Lidl's decision to limit egg boxes to 3 per customer. Similarly, Asda has set a 2-box limit per customer, with other grocers such as Morrisons and Sainsbury's being yet to make any rationing policies. Sainsbury's has said some stores are running low on eggs and supplies have been sourced from Italy. This is despite the fact that they preciously committed to buying eggs only from British suppliers. Morrisons has previously said it was not facing supply issues. Alongside households, farmers too have been hit by rapidly rising energy costs. They have also had to buy more wheat, a key ingredient in chicken feed, which has risen as a result of the war in Ukraine. Both Russia and Ukraine are producing about 30% of the global supply of wheat. But perhaps more frightening for British farmers is the country's largest ever avian influenza outbreak. The outbreak has led to millions of birds being killed in the past 12 months in the United Kingdom. British farmers have said despite the price of dozen eggs having risen by 45 pence in supermarkets since last March, they've only received between 5 pence and 10 pence of that increase and are not being paid a fair price for their eggs. Therese Coffey, the Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, has said in the past that she is not concerned about the overall supply of eggs in Britain. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story. Tesco has become the latest major supermarket chain to impose rationing of eggs. Customers are restricted to 3 boxes as bird flu disrupts major supply chains. Last week it was reported that Asda and Lidl had also set limits on eggs for shoppers. The United Kingdom is facing its largest ever bout of bird flu with a highly pathogenic variant. Tesco has joined other supermarkets in limiting the number of boxes of eggs customers can buy as the impact of rising costs and bird flu continue to take their toll. The shopping chain said it had introduced a temporary buying limit of 3 boxes of eggs per customer as a precautionary measure. Earlier this month, Asda and Lidl announced limits on egg purchases at some of their stores. The National Farmers Union, the NFU, has called for an urgent investigation into the egg supply chain disruption. The National Farmers Union said the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, should look into whether a declaration should be made under the Agriculture Act 2020 to ensure much-needed support for egg producers. The government said the situation is being monitored but insisted the United Kingdom's food supply chain is resilient and that no significant impact is expected. The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs spokesperson said, "We understand the difficulties that rising costs combined with the bird flu outbreak are causing for farmers, and we are working with industry to monitor the egg market. Britain's food supply chain is resilient. There are 38 million laying hens across the country, and we are not expecting any significant impact to the overall supply of eggs." The National Farmers Union, NFU, said a declaration under Section 20 of the Agriculture Act would enable DEFRA to use its statutory powers to provide much-needed support to egg producers whose livelihoods are under threat. The National Farmers Union president, Minette Batters, said it is critical that the government acts now to give egg producers the confidence that they need.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. Well, the America of today is the same America of yesterday. The America of today is the same America of August 19, 1953. It is the same America that held Saddam Hussein. It is the same America of the past few years, with one or two important differences which we must pay attention to. First of all, the enemy's tactics have become more complex. We need to pay attention to this. The enmities remain the same, but the methods of applying these enmities are different and more complex. It is not easy to untie the knots. You need to pay attention. You need to be alert. Of course, we trust our own children, our own youth, and our own officials.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We know they are capable of dealing with things that are complicated, but it is complex. That is one difference. Secondly, that day, the 9th of August, and the like, and even until the beginning of the revolution, the US was the dominant power in the world. But that is not how it is today. This is one important difference. Today, the US is not the world's dominant power. Many of the world's political analysts believe that the US is declining. It is gradually melting away. We aren't the ones saying this. Of course, we have the same opinion, but the world's political analysts are also saying it. The signs are evident. The United States' domestic problems are unprecedented in the economic, social, and moral fields, as well as their internal conflicts and the blood-stained divisions inside the country. Another sign is also their miscalculation of the world's affairs. For example, 20 years ago, they attacked Afghanistan. The Taliban were in power at that time.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
On Tuesday, Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni unveiled Italy's 2023 draft budget bill during a press conference held at the government building. The package features a $35 billion spending plan and fiscal policies focusing mainly on supporting families, self-employed workers and those on low incomes.
Due grandi priorità.
There are two big priorities: growth, which means safeguarding our production system, and social justice, which means focusing on families and on people on low incomes. This budget is the product of political choices, as is normal for a political government.
About two-thirds of the 35 billion euro budget bill will be allocated to measures aimed at helping struggling families and businesses with the cost of living emergency. Power bills have skyrocketed amid the energy crisis sparked by the Ukraine war, while Italy's annual inflation rate was almost 12% in October, the highest level since March 1984.
Buying food, fuel, paying power bills, it's very difficult. We are struggling to make ends meet. We expect this government to help us.
The government must ease tax pressure. We can't go on this way anymore. And the war in Ukraine should be stopped. All problems began with the conflict.
A flat tax rate on incomes of up to 85,000 euros for professionals and individual businesses is to be introduced, while the controversial citizenship wage basic income introduced by the Five Star Movement in 2018 is set to be reduced. Also, the pension system will be reformed to allow early retirement. The Cabinet also discussed the 2013 Euratom Directive, which deals with civilians being exposed to ionizing radiations. Euratom is the European Atomic Energy Community, which was set up in the late 50s to shape Europe's nuclear energy market. The draft budget bill will now be sent to Brussels for approval before it is passed. Max Civili, Rome.
People have gathered to receive winter fuel in form of coal and wood distributed by Iranian embassy in Kabul to warm the cold days of their lives. Najiba and Tahira, who take care of their children all alone, cry out the problems of the cold winter.
I don't have a supporter and my husband has passed away. It's five of us in my family, all of whom are jobless. Currently, we live in a rental house. We could really use such aids and hope it continues, especially in winters.
It is a hard winter, especially for us who don't have the primary needs of our lives. I have small children. I literally don't have anything to warm my home. I work hard to feed my seven family members, but still can't meet our needs.
Almost all who receive relief aids are widows and orphans, most of whom burn plastic, tires, and other waste materials to warm their houses and sometimes cook food. The happiness is noticeable as these widows can provide a warm home for their orphans. The number of these families can reach up to 1,000.
Well, we are prepared to distribute fuel to 1,000 families. The fuel is firewood and coal. We give each family a package of almost 200 kilograms. It isn't much, but it could be enough for almost a month. We are hoping to be able to continue such activities in the coming months also.
With the arrival of winter, concerns about the situation of the people of Afghanistan have intensified. The arrival of winter and warming houses has added to the daily problems of the poor in Afghanistan. Although aid is being provided to some people, there are still many who spend their nights in cold weather. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Four members of an Italian neo-Nazi organization known as the Order of Hagal were arrested on Tuesday in the cities of Naples, Caserta and Avellino, about 200 kilometers south of Rome. At different phases within the process of the investigation, the police collected numerous Nazi and fascist propaganda material, bullets, weapons, tactical clothing and other elements that convinced Italy's judiciary to make charges against members of the Order of Hagal. The police investigation was launched in 2019 when authorities suspected neo-Nazi groups were plotting violent acts in Italy. Today, members of the neo-Nazi organization, the Order of Hagal, have been accused of planning to carry out terrorist attacks on civilian and police targets.
Investigative activity showed that the neo-Nazi organization placed in Italy and Nazi Ukrainian military groups, such as the Azov Battalion, Misanthropic Division and Centuria, have been in contact to conduct paramilitary training. In fact, diplomas were given for completing the training.
The Azov Battalion is a neo-Nazi paramilitary group that has been incorporated into the Ukrainian National Guard and is currently fighting against Russian troops. The Order of Hagal is an organization based in the area surrounding Naples. Authorities, however, suspect that the group may have subdivisions across Italy. The Order of Hagal has established operational ties to the Azov Battalion. Besides Nazism and anti-Semitism, it promotes subversion and white supremacy culture.
Some of the neo-Nazis' organization's members were trained in Ukrainian camps with the purpose of conducting the military operations in Italy. The group was recruiting among disadvantaged Italians, often young people, people who have a negative, incomplete view of society and can be easily manipulated. The Order of Hagal maintains direct and frequent contacts with its members over Telegram.
An additional member of the neo-Nazi Order of Agal organization remains wanted by the Italian police, but is currently fighting Russian forces alongside the Azov battalion. Not long ago, a high-ranking officer from the International Criminal Police Organization, Interpol, warned that the high availability of weapons during the current conflict in Ukraine will result in the proliferation of illicit arms in the post-conflict phase. Max Civili, Rome.
People turned out in the city of Isfahan to bid farewell to three security forces who lost their lives in the street violence, gripping several Iranian